Session number 27345, Reel 3.
So Stoughton, Reel 3. With your training, did you get any classroom work as well at that
school? Oh yes. We went to school every once a week for a whole morning. And even on board ship, when I joined HMS Ivanhoe, I went to school on board ship, because I was the youngest one on board ship.
And what type of things would they be teaching you?
Just ordinary, mental, ordinary, arithmetic, English, spelling, and everything else. Nothing out of the ordinary at all. It was just an ordinary classroom work. And when I was on board HMS Ivanhoe and we was out in Palestine, I went to school in Haifa, because that was the base where we were. We was based in Haifa because we had to patrol, and there was the whole flotilla there of I boats, nine, and we all went, all the youngsters off the boats, off all the other ships, all went to school, and that's how you used to see other fellas on the other boats, because you was all going to school one morning a week.
When you were at Chatham, though, who did the instructing there?
We used to have a lieutenant who used to do the schoolwork. Must have been well up in it, because we didn't know what he was, whether professor or not, but he was a lieutenant, and he took the class. And he was very knowledgeable. He was a very good man.
Did you do any naval history at that stage?
Not a lot of naval history. Not much at naval history at all. I think the idea was that you found that out yourself.
One of the things that interests me, obviously during this training period, did you have to familiarise yourselves with the various ranks within the Navy?
Oh yes. You knew. You had to know who was who and what was what. Because if you didn't salute, you was in trouble. That man. Stand still. Don't you salute? And if you didn't know that rank, you wouldn't know how to salute. So you were told, right from the bosun's mate, or the bosun. The bosun, he was just a very thin gold ring, or ring. He was the bosun's. And then he had a bosun's mate, which was the chief petty officer. But that was the lowest one, and even a midshipman, which I never had much to do with. I never came across a midshipman, because they were mostly big ships, and small ships, you don't get a midshipman.
How would you address your instructors?
Sir.
So petty officers would be addressed as sir?
And if they were chief petty officers, you call them chief. But you would still say sir, chief, or chief, sir. You automatically started to say sir, irrespective of, well, I suppose, being that you were raw and you were a sprog. You didn't know much about it, so you spoke to him more or less, and you didn't know, you wasn't sure of all their ranks. You said sir to him, so you knew you couldn't be in trouble. If you didn't say sir to him, you could be in trouble, you see. So I think the easiest way out was that we called nearly everybody sir until we were familiar with what their rank was. Then we used to say yes chief, yes petty officer, or chief, and things like that.
Would people have a problem sometimes who they saluted, or would they get it wrong? Would you salute the petty officer?
No. You're not entitled to a salute. Chief petty officer is not entitled to a salute. It's only an officer who's entitled to a salute. A midshipman is entitled because he is a budding officer. And from then up is the salute. But a petty officer, leading hand, leading seaman, petty officer, chief petty officer, TI, torpedo gunner's mate, none of them are entitled to a salute.
And how would you familiarise yourselves with these ranks? Would you be given a sheet with the various ranks on it, or would there be
you were given a manual. You had a seamanship manual, which was about that thick, big blue book. And in it was everything you wanted to know about seamanship and Navy and its ranks. And it was there, the lot. And that was your Bible. Because that's what you used to look up when you wanted to find out things. because you was even taken on in whalers, in rowing, and sailing whalers and everything else. You knew, had to know how to do it, you see. And that was your manual all the time, because it showed you how to do it.
So how much time would you spend during that period, that basic training period? How much time would you spend having a look at the Seaman's Manual?
Well, I think you would look at the manual nearly every day, because you would check on the manual to see if you was doing it right. You think, you know, when you was told something, I'll check that, you know, make sure I do it right. And you would look in the manual to see that you were doing it. Same as when you got to your knots. In the seamanship manual, with quite a terrific chapter on knots, and even showed you all the knots and how to do them. So all you had to do, if you wanted to know how to do the fisherman's bend, you look up fisherman's bend, and lo and behold, it tells you all how to do it. So you would be shown in the morning. So when you got back to barracks in the evening, if you was that much interested, you used to look it up in your manual and see the how to do it, and whether you was being shown right. And were you doing it right? That was why. And it was a very good manual, a very, very good manual indeed.
You mentioned one thing there, which was the boat training with the whalers.
Okay.
Can you take me through what they taught you there?
First of all, they taught you how to row. And the worst position to row is the bow. Because, as you know, the whaler tends to curve up a bit. And if you're in the bow, you're higher up than the stern, you see. And if the stroke's there, and you've got five, stroke, three more, bow. And that's the crew, fine. He's all right because he's on a flat. He's only that much, the gunwale's only about that much from the water. But when you come to the bow's about that much from the water. And of course, therefore, you've got to hunch up to row. And I always got the bow position because, for a simple reason, I was a tiddler. As I told you, I was rather smallish. And I was always put in the bow. And that was my position always in the whaler, was the bow. Because I was in the racing whaler's crew on HMS Ivanhoe. And we challenged the big ships up in Scapa. And we won. We beat them. And I was the racing whaler's crew in the bow.
So in your training, where did the instructor in how to row first, or your positions, would you do that on dry land?
They'd show you first the whaler and everything. You go to the whaler, because they'd have a whaler on in the barracks, you see. And you go to the whaler and they would show you the positions, sit there, and the thwarts, and your feet rests and so forth. And how to row, and how to get hold it, and how to feather your blade. Oh, yes. You just didn't pull it out and just pull it out like that. You had to and feather it so that when you pulled it back, the blade was like that. Then you go down and you pull.
So the blade would be horizontal and would then drop vertically and you would pull back.
And that's how you got your leverage against from the oil. Oh, yes, you had to learn how to do that, how to feather your blade. And, of course, if you see the chaps on the... in the games, rowing, you see them feather their blade all the way, don't they? And you still have to do it in the Navy because it's wind resistance, you see. If you've got your blade like that and you're pushing, but if it's like that, it cuts. And down you go. And of course, you've got to do this movement with your hands, not that all the time.
What's the term catching a crab mean? Does that mean?
That's when you that's when your oar's stuck in the water and you can't get it out. you're like that, trying to pull it up, or you're holding water and things like that. You see, that's catching a crab, and you want well light if you caught a crab. I can tell you.
So once you'd had the instruction on land, where would they take you out?
Into the dockyard. Go into the dockyard. There was a whalers there, and you would go out onto the Thames, onto the river.
How far would you go?
Sometimes you'd be out there for a good half hour or more, because each one would be, they'd be switching the positions. First you'd be stroke, you see, because you had to know how to do the stroke in case you've got in. You'd be stroke, and then you'd stop and you'd change over. A bit dicey, you know, changing over. But then you finally get up into the bow. And as I say, I always won the bow position, eventually. On board ship, I was always bowman on board ship.
Is it hard work?
Rowing a whaler, it is very, very hard work. It's quite a big boat, you know. It's capable of carrying a crew, coxswain and five. And it's capable of carrying 24 men seated around. I know that for a fact. More than a fact, I know that. Because that was the amount of men when we was in Dunkirk that we were allowed to take on board the whaler when we went inshore. But if you took more, you could have capsized the boat.
Could you row, two of you row from the same oar? Would that happen occasionally?
Oh, yes, yes, you two. But it'd be very, very awkward. It's more or less a one-man oar. But two men could row, but it's a bit naughty, a bit dicey, because you haven't got a lot of room on them. The actual oar, the handle of the oar is about that long, I suppose.
So it's like
round.
A foot and a half.
Yeah. It's round, you see, so you can change it. But then you start coming to, the blade comes from the round, starts to go flat, and you've got nothing to hold on to. So that you didn't have a lot of room to do a double row. It was mostly a single row all the time.
Did you have problems with your hands at all?
Oh, sometimes you used to get some little sore hands, yeah. You used to get some blood blisters, you used to get some water blisters and everything else, yeah. But eventually your hands get hardened and you're all right.
So how often would you be doing the boat training?
What, in the barracks?
Yeah.
I think we did boat training. It became one of the last things, in actual fact. I think we did about a fortnight on boats altogether. Boats and riggings.
I was going to say, did you do any sailing as well?
Never sail. I was never taught to sail in my when I was being taught. I went in a sailing boat. It was already rigged. And was told how to change tacks and how to tack, but not to rig one or do much sailing in it, no. Most of me sailing of boats I learnt on board ship.
So you've done a number of these things with training. You've done a bit of signals, you've done gun, a bit of rifle shooting, you've done basic drill, you've done some boat work, you've done knots and that sort of thing.
Then you're picked. Then you're picked out. And that's when you get where you're going to do. You're going to be. They'll mark you, your card, and gunnery and so forth, seaman and so forth. I was classified for seaman. I wasn't classified for gunnery or anything like that. But the seaman first. But then from the seaman on board ship, you get detailed whether you're going to become a gunnery rating, or a torpedo rating, or anything else. Except the others that went into the right inside or didn't do much good as an ordinary seaman, and were possibly offered cooks at the mess, cooks jobs and things like that.
Could I ask a little bit before the selection went on? What would happen if there was a breach of discipline? Were there any things that you mustn't do, that you're prohibited from doing while you were in Chatham Barracks?
Well, yes, there were certain areas you weren't allowed to go. And as I say, the parade ground, you had to double. You never walked during the day. It was always double. And you were never allowed into the officers' quarters or the petty officers' quarters. You had to keep to your own barracks. And if you wanted anything and you found that something was wrong, you would tell your instructor. Because you had the same instructor that took you, that was in charge of you all the time. Although the instructor didn't give you the instructions, he was in charge of you. And he went to all of them with you because somebody else would instruct you, see. Because when you had to go to various places, you could be about 5 minute march away or 5-10 minute march away. So you just couldn't amble along in little droves. You was marched along properly, and your instructor, the one that was taken to, he used to march you, you see. And that's how you used to go in. Because it was all done very, very methodical and everything else. When you mustered in the morning, you mustered in your bodies of men, in your lines, and then the instructor would be there.
Can I ask you just to give me an idea of the daily routine? What time you get up, what you do, what you do till you went
well,
to bed?
Well, in barracks it was 6:30, call up. And, of course, officially you're not allowed to touch another man's hammock while he's in it. But you used to have the old bosun's mates, chief gunner's mates and everybody else used to come into the mess and into the barracks and come along now, bump, bump. And of course you have a cane, bump, bump, bump. And you was awake. And you had to get out. Because if you wasn't out, he'd be after you. You'd be out, do your ablutions, have your wash, whichever the case may be. Mostly it was washing. Because you had your showers over the evening and things like that. But most of it was washing. Then you came back and you tied your hammock up. And you had to give you 7 strains to tie your hammock up. With a half hitch. Half hitch, half hitch, and half hitch. And sometimes it was inspected. The gunner's mate or the bosun's mate that was calling you, getting up in the morning, would come along and look at it. That's good. That's ropey. That's good. And so you'd learn that way, you see, that you've got to do it right, make sure you do it right, and you have to make sure that your cleats and everything else, your clues rather, were all nicely woven in, so that you could get your hammock and you could carry it like that. There'd be nothing trailing, and you'd just have a hammock about that long.
So about 4 foot long?
About 4 foot long, yeah.
So you'd sew your hammocks. What would be the next thing?
Breakfast. The cooks of the mess would have been gone for breakfast. And that could be anything. Kippers, eggs, bacon. Oh, you was well looked after with tomatoes, fried eggs, boiled eggs, whichever you wanted. And that's what you had to do. And then you had breakfast, and then you would muster, say, at 8 o'clock in front of the barracks. You'd muster there, and along come your instructor. And that was it. Then you knew, and you say, right, we're going to do so-and-so today. Fall in, you fall in, and away you go.
And how long would you do that from 8 o'clock until?
8 o'clock till 4. Hour for dinner. Hour for dinner.
Where would the
8 till 12. Then 12 to 1, lunch, remaster, back again. And he'd be finished. Then he'd fetch you back to your barracks at 4 and dismiss you. And that's your day's your own.
With lunch, where would that be taken?
In your barracks. Because you'd have your cooks of the mess would already gone down to get it for you. And
how would that day be divided up? You say he'd tell you what you're doing that day, but would you do more than one thing in the morning, or would you do two, or would you do one specific thing?
No, mostly it was whatever you was going to do was mostly a complete day. Marching was, you were tired when you did the marching because you had about a full week of it first, and you marched from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, up and down, up and down, up and down. You did get breaks. I mean, you were allowed to fall out and have a cigarette and things like that.
I was going to say, was smoking prohibited at all?
No, they didn't prohibit you smoking. They didn't like you smoking in the mess decks because you're going to sleep in there, so you live in quarters. Right? But they did smoke in there. But remembering that I could get a pound of cigarette tobacco for half a crown. And you used to get that once a month in barracks. A pound of cigarette tobacco. And in the band room, because we had the band, there was a band there, in Chapman Barracks, Chapman Band. In the band room, they had a cigarette making machine. So if you didn't want to roll your own, you used to take your pound of cigarette tobacco into the band room, pass them across the counter with a 2 shilling piece, and you'd get 300 cigarettes already made because they'd make them in the band room in this machine. So they used to take you by, and that's how they used to do it.
4 o'clock, you said your day becomes your own.
That's right.
What time would your evening meal be?
Six.
So how would you pass that time between 4 and 6?
Well, at various times, you'd be... I used to look up my manual now and again, or I'd go across, think to myself, oh, I fancy a cup of tea. I'd go across to the navy, have a cup of tea. And of course there were shops in there as well, in the barracks and things, and you go and look in the shops and things, so forth and so forth.
What type of things could you get from the navy?
Well, you could get the old favourites, egg and chips. If you felt hungry, you'd have egg and chips. Cakes, loads of cakes, toast, toasted cheese, anything like that, cup of tea.
Did they sell things that you needed? Because did you have to pay for, say, polish and that type of things out of your own?
Oh, yes, and they would sell all that in the naffy shop. You go in the naffy shop and get you toothpaste and all that sort of business. And spares like bootlaces, things like that.
Did that come out of your money?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Once you was issued with it, with your kit, it was your responsibility. And if you had to polish your boots, you had to buy the polish. Navy never give you the polish. You had to buy it all.
So you'd spend time like that. What would everybody else... Would people spend time in the mess? What would they be
doing? Oh, yes. You'd be playing Ludo, or Uckers, as we used to call it. Uckers. And various games. And you'd watch some of the old ones in the other messes, because there would not only in the barracks would be new boys, but there would be proper messes of old sailors that were waiting for a ship and things like that. And you'd see two of them in there playing mahjong, yeah, and all this sort of business, you see. And a fascinating game, mahjong. I wish I could have, and of course even some of them played chess. But the mahjong, that used to be the one, because I don't know why, but when they put, you've seen the mahjongs, haven't you? When they put them down, they do some put them down, they whack them down. Like that. All the time. Whack, whack, whack. And I watched them on board ship, two old and the old ones. And wham them down, wham them down. That noise, but it was something that they always did, because the Chinese apparently do that. They do wallop them down hard. So you've got to wallop them down hard. And that was it. And he'd write letters home, read letters, because there would be mail coming in.
Would you have access to a library?
A library, yes. Library was there. Go to a library. Yeah. And papers. You could always get papers.
So what would your evening meal be like? What would you get for that?
Well, the evening meal would be like a dinner, again. Be on a lighter scale, not so heavy, but you would get meat and things like that. You could possibly get a pot miss again for dinner. All depends.
When you were there in the evening and you'd had a heavy day doing things, were you hungry?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You were hungry. And that's where a lot of the time, before you got your dinner, because you finished at 4, we had a couple of hours before you had something to eat. That's where you used to go down into the naffy and have your cake, cup of tea and a cake, to pass the time away. And also to stay the pangs of hunger a bit.
And how much time would you have after your dinner till lights out?
3 hours, 7 o'clock till about 10. No comfort though. There was no plush armchairs to sit in. It was always on the stools and up the table and all this sort of business, or on the lockers. There was no nice armchairs to sit in or anything like that. No, it was sparse and spartan.
Were you ever inspected in your mess?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You could have a lightning inspection in the mess and a lightning kit inspection. You wouldn't know. Your own instructor would do that. He would come up and do that. And he'd check to see that all the utensils were clean and everything else properly, and everything was washed up properly and so forth. And the floor was properly polished.
Would an officer ever inspect you while you were in desert training?
Sometimes, on a Sunday, you would have rounds, and it would be an officer doing the rounds. And he would do each set of barracks, one officer, one officer, one officer.
Would that be inspections of messes even for the older sailors?
Everybody would not be excused. Nobody would, if it was officers' rounds, nobody would be excused.
And what would happen if some item of kit was missing on an inspection? What would
well, then he would have to show, the instructor would take the information down, and then he would have to, or I would have to make sure that I replaced it or got that piece of clothing that was missing and show it to the instructor that I had replaced it. And if the utensils and everything else wasn't all that clever, you'd have the click of the mess, the leading hand of the mess that was in charge. He would be pulled over because that urn was a bit dirty once cleaning, and he would have everybody in the mess cleaning all the urns. And that was it.
At lights out, would you have to be quiet? Would you have to go to sleep at that stage?
You could read, but because the light was very dim and you couldn't read very, very much. You did most of your reading before. But once you turned in, I think everybody more or less slept.
Did your fellow recruits have any favourite reading material?
Well, a lot of them used to read same books, murder books. a lot of murder books were read, I'm afraid, yes. Not a lot of interesting books were read. I must be guilty myself. I used to read some murder books and so forth and such which. I think he wanted a change. That was the reason why. Because you live and breathe a sailor and instructions and being shown how to do this and shown how to do that. And eventually it becomes so monotonous that you have to do. I know, I'm not saying that the training was monotonous, but what you was doing, that you had, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do. It became a little bit monotonous because you didn't seem to get a lot of breaks. So you used to read a different book of something else, something light, to take it away from you. That's the way I thought of it, anyway. I used to read the murder books and so forth. And a lot of people used to like reading the papers, of course.
And how was your barracks heated, or was it? Did you need it while you were there?
It was central heated. Radiators all the way around. It weren't very cold. During the winter, they were quite warm. Quite warm.
At night, would anybody be on duty?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There would be men leading hands on night duty, patrolling all the way around. Well, as it used, what they used to say about the sailors, and so they had to make sure none of that went on sort of business. But there was always men about.